there, everyone. It is Tuesday, and just today I have had scores and scores of people hitting me up on Facebook and Twitter, and by scores I mean two, at least, asking me, where is the new podcast? Where is the new episode? I'm dying for it. And can I tell you how full that makes my heart feel? I love to be wanted. Oh, man. Let's not get pathological. But anyway, here's the podcast that I've been promising. I initially said that I would put it out on Wednesdays, and then I started releasing episodes on Tuesdays just to get, because I was so excited about putting them out there, but I think it will be a Wednesday schedule from now. And today for episode 4, oh, I should tell you who I am. My name is Ella Morton. Hello. This is Ellipsis, the podcast about things we think about but do not say. You can find me at ellipsispodcast.com, and I especially recommend going there for this episode because I put a lot of related links and embedded video for today's episode, which gets quite intense. We talk about some serious issues, but, you know, in a fun way. My guest today, I'm excited to have her, is a Claire Morton. Yes, that's a Claire, like the pastry, like the French dessert with chocolate on top. If you're interested in the origin and the meaning of her name, then I recommend going to ellipsispodcast.com and watching the embedded YouTube video that we made a few years ago where she talks about her name and how she feels about having it and what people say to her about it. But for now, let's sit back and listen to this conversation. Oh, one more thing is that we have different accents, which you will pick up on immediately. And that's because when Claire was 15, she moved to New York with my mother and I stayed back in Sydney. So she's picked up the accent along the way, although she still says some words in an Australian way. So that's enough in terms of explanation. Here we go. Episode 4 with a Claire Morton.
So how are you feeling today?
I have a bit of a cough, as okay. The listeners may hear throughout the podcast.
Any other hardships you're dealing with?
Well, other than a massive nihilist meltdown.
Wow.
Yeah, but we were going to say, isn't that what we're going to talk about?
Let's, because, dear listeners, I'm in a bit of a funk because last night I saw Melancholia and it kind of messed with me.
Yes.
And I think it was for a few reasons. I mean, the person I saw it with fell asleep like 4 times. But as it ended and the lights came up, I was just sitting there as though I'd witnessed a murder. And I just felt like I had to go home and sit alone and cry for a while. The main character, played by Kirsten Dunst, is dealing with some really heavy depression, and there's...
The world is ending.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the world is ending, right. And there's a big planet called Melancholia that may collide with Earth. And obviously Melancholia is a metaphor. It comes out from behind the sun. It's depression. So there's just this one part where Kirsten's just lost it, and she's just really, really depressed, and she's on the phone with her sister, and her sister's telling her, like, just get into a taxi,
mm-hmm.
and it's like she can't even move, like she's so debilitated.
They're trying to bathe her.
Right? Yeah, she's there's this one part where, Kirsten, I'm just going to call her by the actor's name, mm-hmm. She arrives at her sister's house, and she just, it's like she's been depleted of her soul. She just kind of falls into bed and sleeps for like 2 days, and then her sister tries to make her take a bath, but she just physically can't take a bath because it's like it's too much effort.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think that's the bit that really got to me. That's like, I know how that feels.
Yeah, I think we've all been in this state before.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, how do you deal with states like that?
Well, interesting. Actually, that cartoon that you sent me, tell them what it is. The videos.
Oh, God. Okay, so there's, if you don't read Hyperbole and a Half by Ali Brosh, you really should. It's amazing. It's these stories and drawings that go along with them, and they're really funny. She has a blog that's really popular. She had been absent from the web for like 6 months, and nobody really knew what was going on, and then she posted this extraordinary story about how she'd been dealing with major depression and how it got to the point where she felt so kind of worthless that she decided that nothing meant anything.
Doesn't matter anymore.
Nothing mattered, and therefore anything could happen and anything was possible. So it was almost like she came through the other side by acknowledging that life is meaningless, so it's time to create your own meaning.
Mm-hmm. Or you just give up on... like, that's any time that I've gotten... It kind of fixes itself for me, because any time I've gotten so far depressed, I get to the point where I just don't care about anything, and that kind of solves it, because it might start off being depressed about something, and you care about something, you're so distressed about something, but you get down such a hole that you're just like, oh, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I live or die, I don't care if the world ends, I don't care about anything, kind of like how Kirsten Dunst's character was in Hellboy. And you get to the point where you stop caring, and then it just sort of goes up from there, because you become this invincible thing of, well, kill me, whatever, I don't care anymore, so it's all good, you know, you can only go up from there. A week ago, so I started off with melancholia, and then about a week ago, I just by pure chance ran into a deceased person being removed from the building next to my house. And loaded into the coroner's truck with shelves of deceased people. And it was just a very surreal experience and just so, so sort of in your face death and unceremonious death. And just the thought of like, oh my God, that's it. We're all gonna die. Like,
yeah.
Just in my face. So then, you know, I went to work the next day. And I was, like, a few minutes late for work, and my manager wasn't too happy about that. And I just had this sudden feeling of, like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're gonna die. I'm gonna die. This is so insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. And it just, like, I don't know, it was a weird week for me. Because in the shadow of all of that death, everything seemed so insignificant.
Yeah.
So insignificant and unimportant.
I had that sort of juxtaposition with, when I saw Melancholia, it was before the main screening, they had previews, and one of them was for this new Alvin and the Chipmunks movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like, explosive.
Who cares?
Well, yeah, but it was the ultimate who cares, because all of it was like these little chipmunk animated characters singing Lady Gaga songs and making pop cultural references that are like 3 years old and just kind of, it was also kind of lurid and obviously like a cash grab from Hollywood. And it was just like, to juxtapose that with the way I felt after watching Melancholia, it was that sense of like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Let's talk about more fun things. Cause I feel like we've just depressed everyone so hard right now.
Death and fungus.
Let's talk about growing up. I met you when I was... Ooh. A year and 10 months old in New Zealand.
Oh, we're gonna play the clip, right?
Yes. Well, that's gonna come later. Some clip. That'll come later. But yes, you arrived at Wellington Women's Hospital, and
that's right.
Mum informed me that I would need to be sharing the limelight. To which I said, "I'm sorry, what?" And I was thoroughly unimpressed initially.
But oh, we should have a link to that photo of you glaring at me.
I'm putting it as the thing on my blog.
Good.
So have a look at ellipsispodcast.com and you'll see a highly amusing photo from the moment we met.
Yes, while I am still in a very vulnerable blanket wrapped state, Ella looks like she is plotting her disposal of me.
I was just shocked. It took a while to get used to it, but you know. But we are very different.
Definitely.
Because I was a very anxious child, and I just wanted everything to be right. I was always very goody-two-shoes, very academically focused. I respected authority. I was quite deferential to authority.
Mm-hmm.
And
then I've been the buck wild.
Yeah. We used to, our school, our primary school was so small that we had grades 3, 4, 5, and 6 together in the same classroom.
Oh, that's right.
So occasionally we would be in the same room. During school days.
Yeah, and I think I felt bad sometimes because I feel like you would feel this sense of responsibility for my actions.
Yeah, funny that, because the teacher would be like, Ella, when you get home, tell your mother that Claire was bad today.
Oh, God.
And I'd be like, split loyalties.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sorry for that emotional trauma.
Yeah, I got over it.
So
that happened.
Yeah.
And then we grew up, we went to different high schools.
You went to the smart school, but And I think everyone, you know, the thing that bothered me about that wasn't that you got in and I didn't. It's that everyone, like our adult, you know, our parents and teachers and stuff, they all knew and assumed that that was going to happen, you know?
Oh, that I would get in.
Yeah, like they're just, oh, well, we'll go to New Girls because that's a smart school. And then when I went to take the test, they were like, sure. Go take the test. See what will happen.
Also you.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll just type up these test results on my fake typewriter. No, but you're smart in a different way. I think you wouldn't have liked my school.
I probably would not have succeeded in it.
My school had a disdain for the arts.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think that's remiss of me to say.
What were they breeding over there? That sounds wrong, but did most graduates of that high school, are we talking like, because, you know, a lot of times certain high schools are sort of like the breeding ground for some, you know, like, did they make lawyers?
Well, doctors? Basically, when we went to our careers advisor, he was like, okay, girls, would you like to be a doctor or a lawyer?
Oh, God.
So there was a lot of pressure to get, because we had a reputation as being one of the top schools in our exam results at the end of year 12. So It was always this pressure to do really well.
Oh, you started in law school, didn't you?
Yes.
You did.
I enrolled in a combined arts law degree, because in Australia you can do law at an undergraduate level if you combine it with another degree.
Huh.
Yeah, that didn't go so well.
Yeah.
In fact, I was
a lawyer.
Yeah, I would have been a terrible lawyer, like Ally McBeal caliber.
Growing up, you were always the, kid that stayed in school and all that stuff. And then a few times in our lives, we've sort of switched.
We swapped, yeah. Because when I went to uni and, which was college, sorry.
I feel like you were rebelling against that image.
I had a bit of a, I don't know what happened, this is part of the lost years, but when I started college, that was the time when you and Mum moved to New York. And right. So I was just by myself. Well, I had a roommate for a little while, but it didn't really work out. So I was just living in Sydney and going to university. And I'd done really well at school, and I'd gotten a really high grade in my final exams. And I just stopped caring about everything. And I just decided that it didn't matter. And I stopped going to classes, but I didn't notify people. So I just got straight zeros.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pay my bills and my electricity got turned off and I was living by candlelight.
Oh, man.
You
were having a nihilistic meltdown.
I was. And I just didn't care about anything. And, yeah, I would kind of obliterate myself in various ways. It's kind of crappy. And I don't know why. I mean, I think a lot of things have been building up for a long time. But it is funny that I had been academic superstar for 12 years and then I was just failing.
Right. I think it's good. It's almost like a cleansing to do that, though.
Yeah.
To switch positions and live, you know, as the opposite for a while.
Hmm.
It gives you way more perspectives.
It does.
You know, you learn a lot doing stuff like that.
But I don't know. I mean, my thing was so motivated by shame. Like, I literally couldn't write essays because I would write a sentence and then decide it was horrible.
That's something we have in common.
Yeah. I would picture my professor reading it and just making faces of disgust and thinking, this is the worst thing I've ever read. And so I would just never hand anything in. And I would be so ashamed about the fact that I hadn't handed anything in.
Yeah.
That I couldn't go to class because I couldn't face the professor. And it just kept spiraling down and down and down.
Yeah, that I've definitely been there. I mean, that's something as that we were both, that's something that's definitely come out of our childhood is perfectionism and also not being able to deal with something if it isn't perfect and the shame of it not being right or something. I still like even on the stupidest little things like I'll be about to go to sleep at night and I'll like you know a lot of times in the workplace or whatever I speak Spanish and you know I speak okay Spanish but definitely not perfect. And I'll find just without even having any control over it, before I go to bed at night, I'll sort of replay the conversations in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I notice errors, I'll feel like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. They must have been laughing at me. They must have thought I was so stupid. Oh God, I can't face it. Oh, God, I should never speak Spanish again. Oh, you know, and, like, I'll lose sleep over it.
I'll do that for my English conversations.
There are plenty of times I'll use the wrong words in English and stuff like that. And I feel so ashamed and, like, horrible. Yeah. And it's this horrible sinking feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I used to get that on the dumbest things. Like, I remember one time when I was living in Sydney, I bought some shampoo because I bought this special, like, color protecting shampoo. And I bought it at one particular place. And then on the way home, I saw it somewhere else and it was like a dollar cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so angry with myself. I was thinking, you're stupid idiot. You should have waited. Like, why didn't you go to 5 different places and check the prices? Mm-hmm. And it just, like, the level of self-hatred that came from that one tiny incident was really scary.
And it you totally put it all on yourself. Like, the other day, actually, it was the day I saw Melancholia. We were at the Angelica, and I was like, oh, they had iced chocolate. So I was like, oh, iced chocolate, that looks good, I'll get that. So I went over and I asked the girl, oh, could I have a small iced chocolate? And I have a bit of a weird accent, I'll give you that. But, she must have misheard me or something, and then she came back with an iced latte, like iced coffee.
Mm.
And I didn't know what to do. I was like, I mean, this is like a simple situation.
But are you headstrong and feisty?
That normal adults, well, to a certain extent, but in a situation like that, you have like the social awkwardness of it and also the awkwardness of maybe you got it wrong. I mean, I don't drink coffee, so...
But there's also the confrontation of having to tell someone they're wrong.
Yeah, and I felt bad, because she was, like, a sweet, like, she was young, and she was, like, a sweet girl, so I was, like, I really... Because, and I've worked a lot of customer service jobs, too, and I was, like, do I really want to, like, you know, make her day worse, and...
But it would be worse, like, if you just said, oh, actually, I asked for this.
I know, and I was like, shit, should I just drink the coffee? So then, like, I took a sip of it to make sure that, you know, to confirm that it was the wrong thing. And I can't drink coffee. I've never drank coffee. It's too much caffeine. So I was like, ah, oh, fuck. So then I was like, I'm sorry, you know, I can't drink coffee, and I ordered a chocolate, not a coffee. And I felt so bad about it. So, like, I, you know, and there were certain things like that where I'll feel bad about it just for some unknown reason, and then I'll feel bad because I'm feeling bad.
Yes,
I'll be like, oh, don't be stupid. I'll be like, come on, be an adult, you know, deal with this.
Do you remember when we went to McDonald's on George Street? I must have been like 5, 6, and I went down to get 2 sundaes. Maybe 3.
30-cent sundaes.
No, they were the ones with the chocolate also and the caramel. Yeah.
Wow, we must have been spending big.
I know. So I went down to get some, and for some reason, the guy let me have it for free. I don't know why.
Didn't know what to do in that situation.
And I was just kind of confused, and then I went back upstairs, and I gave the sundaes to Mum, and I started crying, because I felt like...
because it feels bad.
I don't know what to do, because that was wrong, and I felt like guilty.
Yeah.
And Mum was just like, oh, he must have just thought you were really cute. And I was like, but no.
That's not according to the script. I mean, I still feel stuff like that, like, you know, in my current life. Like, you'll go to a bar and you'll know the bartender or something, so they'll give you something for free and you'll be like, oh, should I tip them? You know, that sort of social awkwardness of like, this is not according to the script.
Yeah.
You know, now.
I feel like this is, I genuinely feel like this to this day. I feel like I am observing humans and acting like them in order to pretend I'm one of them. Seriously, it's like I'm just looking at the humans and sort of aping their behavior because I don't feel like everybody else. I feel like I just don't get it.
No, I can totally relate to that.
It's good to come home from a night with people and feel energized, not exhausted.
Yes, because you get that a lot, especially when you have new friends. Do you get that when you have new friends that you feel tired?
Yeah, it's
and
so much effort.
And a lot of times
effort,
you'll get like, a headache.
Yes.
Because you have this constant thing of like,
I have to do the right thing.
I better say something smart.
Yeah.
Oh, I better, I should ask them how they feel. Oh, I should ask,
Am I making too much eye contact?
And then, you're like constantly like, you know, evaluating the situation. That's why I hate dates. I can't date.
Yeah, me too.
Such a horrible... Dating is horrible.
Ugh, people. They're the worst.
Yeah, social interaction.
That's why I'm an internet addict. But at the end of, like, the last 2 years of high school and the first year of university were probably my most unhappy years.
Oh, well, yeah, that's probably true for me, too.
Yeah, I think we coincided. Those are, like, the lost years.
You know, I think for most people, that age, I was thinking about it, too, because I was watching that documentary about female serial killers. No, but they had all these cases. They had this one, it's a horrible documentary, one of those real, like, too many recap Discovery Channel ones. It's called Deadly Women. Anyway, so one episode was called Thrill Kills. And there was this group of girls. I've never heard about this. There was this group of girls, and I think it was Indiana in the 90s, who murdered another young girl as just this sadistic, weird thing. Ooh. And, like, there's a lot of cases of this, of teenagers, especially teenage girls. And I was thinking, like, how could that happen? But at the same time, you're so intense at that age. And yeah. Everything you feel, whether it's love or hate or jealousy or whatever, it's unbelievably intense. And I don't think you ever get that. You definitely don't get it before. Mm. And as far as I've experienced, I'm not going to get it after. Like, it's just that one period of time from maybe, like, right in your puberty years, from, like, 14 to, like, 18, that you're just... Yeah. Really intense.
Well, it's funny because it seemed to hit you at 14 and me at 16. So mm-hmm. we were going through our respective craziness simultaneously.
Yeah.
Which was
Sorry, Mom.
Oh my God. Sorry, Mom. It's your birthday today.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the gift of dredging up past traumas.
Yes, and talking about death.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, that was a horrible time. And that's when, I mean, that's what I think of when I see melancholia, like that's the first
yeah,
thing I thought of.
Me too. Yeah, I thought about those years of my life.
Do you want to talk about them or not?
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's been quite a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there that time and here in New York, coming to a new country, which was pretty much the same time period, I was 16, and 9/11 and all that stuff. Yeah, it was an interesting time, a lot to deal with for a young girl.
Hmm.
I don't know how much I want to talk about that, because I feel like people, you know, the thing with that is, too, is the way that I sort of got over that time was brushing it off. And I know that people say that that's a bad thing to do,
yeah.
And you should never do that, but I feel like when... It's something to do with humans, and I think with women as well, we get it especially, that when we get depressed, it's sort of a downward spiral in almost enjoying your depression.
There is a sense of wallowing.
Yeah, you sort of feel sorry for yourself, and then you feel like, oh, well, this, you know, I'm so sad. Oh. And you sort of just keep digging yourself further and further into it. And also when you tell, you know, if you tell people about your problems... especially people that aren't really close to you, then, and especially in a city like New York, they'll just go, oh, God, whatever.
I disagree.
You know, and I feel like, I mean, on some levels they'll connect to you, but it, a lot of times by sort of going out there and admitting that you have, you know, feelings about something or whatever, you're kind of labeling yourself and putting yourself in that box.
I disagree. You know? I completely disagree, because it's not like, I mean, I don't walk around saying, hi, nice to meet you, my name's Ella, I was anorexic for 3 years. But it's something that I still feel is a very significant part of my experience, and it
right.
informs who I am today. So,
yeah.
I think, and I also think it's important to talk about, because there may be people out there who are feeling mm-hmm. like there's no hope, and if they hear other people talk about their own experiences, I mean, I know that I've listened to podcasts. There's a New York-based comedian called Sarah Benincasa, and she had a real problem with agoraphobia for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And she does this one-woman show called Agorafabulous, and it's coming out as a in the form of a book next year. And she tells these crazy stories about like how she she couldn't leave her bedroom, and so instead of going to the bathroom, she used to pee in cereal bowls leave them on the floor and just all this stuff. But I don't look at her and think, oh, there's that crazy chick who peed in the cereal bowls.
I mean, we can all relate to certain, you know, to elements of that, maybe not to that extreme, but yeah.
But I find it
definitely
very...
had days where like, oh, I don't want to go to school or to my first job interview or, you know, can't deal with that. For me, the only thing that worked, because I was, you know, I got to the point where I was having, like, physical things, like panic attacks, which are very much, they're emotional-based things, but they manifest themselves physically, which makes things pretty physically impossible, you know, as far as functioning, it makes it pretty impossible. So, the only thing that really got me over those was that same thing of going so far into it that you don't care anymore and not ever admitting to it sort of thing. Like, not labeling myself as someone that got panic attacks. Like, I would just pretend that I wasn't a person that got panic attacks.
Okay, I can see how that would be empowering, but I think it's also a bit dangerous to just pretend the problem doesn't exist.
Right. And I have run into problems with that, especially, you run into big problems with that in relationships. Because that's where you're really dealing with where your emotions need to mix with other people's emotions.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that still can be a weak spot, because you have this problem of you can brush it off and not talk to, you know, your partner about it, and, you know, maybe sometimes they'll think you're a little weird, and they'll bring it on themselves and not understand why something isn't working, or, you know, why you're feeling one way. They might think it's because of them or something like that, and they won't understand that. So you can go that way and have a lot of confusion, or you can go the other way and be like, well, look, you know, I kind of have these feelings sometimes, or this happened to me, or whatever. And in effect, you're sort of labeling yourself as that, and you might also be freaking them out. So,
I don't think so at all.
It's a tough thing to deal with.
Maybe it's because I live in the world of, like, I'm very interested in psychology, and I read a lot about it, and I think I sort of subscribe to a lot of media that involves it. But as in a relationship or as a friend, I would much, much, much rather that someone was just straight up about any problems they were having.
And I have met a lot of people that have gone through pretty, pretty similar experiences. And you know, people that I'll be friends with for quite a while, and you both sort of brush it off. And then one day, you know, they'll say, oh, well, I used to have this thing when I was younger. And you'll be like, oh, well, me too, you know. And you can sort of relate to them on that and understand some of the little weird things that you have. But
I think that makes for a more solid friendship.
Yeah.
You seem to think that talking openly about problems with mental illness and things of that nature makes you seem weak or makes you seem like...
Yeah, it is. And it's also, it's like a, not a shame thing, but for me, the admission of stuff like that, I don't like the feeling of that.
Do you feel too exposed?
Well, it just, you know, it's like saying, it's like going out and saying, oh, I suck at cooking. You know, it's not your fault.
Like,
giving to the world that I'm not, you know, I failed at something. Or
the thing is, I would respect someone more if they talked about problems they'd had than if they hid it.
Right. Yeah, it does, you know, it takes balls.
There's an episode, dear listeners, there's an episode of the WTF podcast with Marc Maron, where Todd Hansen, who was one of the original editors of The Onion, you know, that newspaper that has the jokey headlines, he talks about how he got so depressed that he attempted suicide, and he just kind of talks through the process. It sounds like a horrible thing to listen to, but it's so affecting and yet so uplifting as well. And it just, listening to that, I was just like, I'm so glad that he spoke about this, because it does give voice to something that a lot of people are feeling, that a lot of people feel shamed into not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I would much rather, I mean, I'm quite open with problems that I've had, and I do that not because I want to say, like, guess, hey, everybody, look at how much I've suffered.
Right.
I'm, you know, it's like a competitive thing. I mean, I just mm-hmm. think it's, I really do think that it benefits people.
I think, yeah, and at the end of the day, I feel the same way. I just don't want it to be me.
Well, you can talk about me then.
Well, I, no, and
my sister went crazy.
I think I feel shame for people, like, I'm scared that people will have that reaction of, oh, you want attention, you want...
I don't think so.
I definitely don't want that feeling. And it also, you know, it's kind of like reopening old wounds.
Mm.
And it's like, if it doesn't feel good to sort of put myself back there, why would I do it kind of thing? Kind of why I don't watch the news.
Right.
Because I don't, you know, I don't like to sort of reminisce about bad things that happen. So,
but don't you feel like you haven't dealt with them properly?
I do. And that kind of scares me because sometimes I feel like I'm brushing things off too much and I feel like I can't pass that and move on to something else. You know, it's kind of like a unsettled thing. I need closure.
Because you're not really into therapy, are you? The concept of it.
No.
Why?
Well, actually, I don't know. I was talking with our mom who works for a therapist about this the other day, and I'm definitely not for drugs unless the person is really, you know, going to harm themselves or others. I feel like it's just not the way to go.
I have a counterpoint to that, though, because
mm-hmm.
I'm on medication at the moment, and that's... and. It's not like you take the pill and then everything's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is part of an overall strategy that lasts for a long time and is ongoing.
Hmm.
And I know definitely that the stuff that I'm on has helped so much in terms of social anxiety. Because I used to have such a huge issue with, like, anytime I went out with people, whether it was one person or a bunch of people, I would just be plagued by this constant self-lacerating internal monologue, and it just would not shut up, and it really freaked me out, and I thought I was going crazy. And that's not a problem anymore, and it's because of this.
Right.
So it's not like this is not a problem anymore, so I go, oh, okay, I'll just keep taking pills for the rest of my life, everything's great.
Right.
I still have it a bunch of things to work on, but it's like a little starting point.
Yeah. At the same, I don't know, it...
I mean,
it's
I don't doubt
like
that...
It's kind of like a crutch, though. Like, the only, like, proud moments I've had with dealing with all that is my own accomplishments in conquering stuff like that. Because I used to be the same way as far as, you know, if you want to pick social anxiety from the many problems...
How many afflictions?
Pick one! It's okay, so let's do social anxiety. No, I mean, when I was younger, especially around the teen years, like 14, 15, I had terrible... You know, I thought I was the ugliest freak in the entire Southern Hemisphere. And I thought that everyone, I would get this thing where I think everyone was staring at me and laughing and like pointing and laughing or something if I went out.
I
remember I was walking down the street one day, and this was in Sydney where everyone has terraces or balconies. There was this group of people on a balcony, and as I walked past, like, under the balcony, they all started laughing. And, you know, probably purely coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember feeling so crushed and horrible, because I thought, I just knew. It's not even that I thought they were laughing at me, it's like I knew. I was like, they're all laughing at me. They think I'm so... you know, hideous, or they think I'm so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, that I was pretty, pretty done. I was pretty down in a bad place. And just slowly over time and getting older, I got over that. And that's kind of like a good accomplishment for me. You know, that's a gold star.
Yeah.
And that kind of helped me deal with other things, because then I could say, oh, well, I used to feel really bad, and then I got over it. So now when I deal with other things, I can be like, oh, well, I got over that. I can, you know, I can
do it. But I don't see the relationship between that and taking medication, because it's not like if you take medication, you can't achieve things on your own.
Yeah, I guess. I think just personally, if I were taking medication, I would get really down on myself because I would feel like it was a failure. Like, I would feel like, oh, God, I'm so messed up that I have to take pills. And, like, and the act of actually taking them every day would just be, like, a daily reminder of something's not right.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I would find that very spirit-crushing. Sorry.
So how do you feel about me? I mean, does that change your opinion of me?
No. But then when it's someone that you know, you kind of... And I know that you've gone through a lot and I want you to be happy. I can't really have that attitude.
Hmm.
But at the same time, I still have a feeling of like, well, I wish that you could sort of just get by without them. But it's more of a like, it's less of a like, oh, come on attitude. It's more of a like sympathy for I feel, you know, I feel bad that you are in that state that you feel like you have to.
But see, I don't see it as so tragic and awful. I mean, the fact that I have to, the fact that I pop a pill each day is like no big deal to me.
Can I just say my pants are falling down?
Sure.
And they shouldn't be because these are my ass enhancing pants.
Oh, but they're aged. Elastic loses its elasticness.
That's true. Does this warrant further explanation, perhaps? I did this spec ad for these Puma pants that are meant to be ass enhancing.
Wait, you're not getting, don't even give the label.
Oh,
you're
sorry.
Not getting paid for it anymore. You know?
I did. Well, I didn't get paid for it initially.
Oh, boy.
It was a friend. It was from my showroom. But, yeah, so you wear these pants and they're meant to, like, squish your thigh fat to make you look totes skinny when you're working out.
See, that is, from my nihilistic point of view right now, that is fucking stupid.
I know. And
why bother?
Yeah, I know.
Why bother?
I know. And the thing is, they just make... Like, if you run and your legs are sweating, they just trap the sweat, and so you get, like,
that's
chafing.
Fungus. That's fungus waiting to happen. That is fungus.
Thank you for joining me for this really intense conversation.
We gotta say something happy. We gotta talk about something great now. Like ice cream.
Okay. I don't... I'm eating vegan these days.
There's,
And I don't really like sweet stuff.
You know what I love eating?
What?
Animals.
What a cheeky monkey. Okay, I'm going to end this episode by playing you a little snippet of this tape that we recorded when I was 3 and Claire was 1. The audio quality is very bad, but hopefully the content will make up for it. So here it is. Bye.
Now we talk. Are you big or little?
Big.
No, what are you? Little or big?
Big.
No, what are you?
Big.
No, little.